Welcome everyone today on today's elections, selections and appointments drafting team call on Monday the 24th of September. On today's call we have Cheryl Langdon Orr, Alan Greenberg, Tijani Benjema, Eduardo Diaz, Rudy Vansnik, Dev Anand Tilutsing, Suriel Antipuro, Roosevelt King. Yovi Atahun will be joining us within the next 30 minutes. We have apologies today from Alejandro Pisanti. And sorry, I've left Olivier Crépin-Leblanc off the roll call. My apologies. And from staff today, we have Heidi Ulrich, Sylvia Vivanco, Matt Ashtiani, and myself, Gisela Gruber. I hope I haven't left anyone out of the roll call. And if I could also please remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Uriel.
Okay, thank you very much. This is Uriel Ansipura for the transcript record. From my part also, I welcome everybody on this call. I think that we have a very good attendance. We wrote with Yaovi, who is the other pen holder, a second version of the draft that has been in the sandbox for a while, and if you have access to the Adobe Connect website, you can now see the version 2.0, which takes into account some remarks. I think Roosevelt King made some remarks to the ROP workspace, and also of course Alan Greenberg this morning European time, I also tried to incorporate some of those suggestions in this text. I hope that you have had the chance to see this before, but first of all I would just like to scroll through this and just explain how we try to reconstitute the elements of the old rules. I think that there was a consensus that the old rules should not be just tweaked in themselves, but rather that we see what's in there, take the elements apart, and then try to put them together in some new configuration. So what I suggest is that we scroll first through this text to get a general idea of what it is. Okay, I can scroll it. So, first of all, is everybody agrees that this is what we could do first?
Yes.
Okay, nobody's against. All right, fine. Thank you. So, first, we put some general provisions here, and there may be more actually in this section. We might move some other things here as well if they are sort of similar in the various subpoints. But first of all, of the appointments covered by this rule, the ALEC chair has to be elected as stipulated by the bylaws, but other appointments can be made by consensus. Failing that, elections can always be used as last report. And here we note that consensus will be defined in the appropriate section of the rules by another work team. The second point in these general provisions is that elections can take place by all these various means: electronic mail, online ballot, written ballot, any other means deemed confidential, convenient, and accurate. The second section is procedures for the election of ALEC chair and other officers.
Yuria, it's Alan. I have a question on the
previous
slide.
Yes,
Do we need to define confidential? The reason I ask is one of the methods that's useful, you know, when you're trying to gather all the votes is telephone, which means the person who makes the call and receives the vote has to be trusted. But I'm not 100% sure that that meets some people's definition of confidential, and yet I would like to make sure that that's an allowed method. Do we need any further words, or is everyone comfortable that confidential, you know, that what I just described is sufficiently confidential that it doesn't need elaboration?
There is, I think that in the old rules, there is, in some point there is a note on the confidentiality of elections, but perhaps we can open the floor on comments on this. How do you feel? Confidential? Is it needed here, or can we delete it?
Well, it's Alan. I think the word confidential is okay, but perhaps we need to define it. And I know somewhere either in the new rules or the old rules, there is talk about a trusted person counting votes or things like that.
Yeah.
So maybe we just need to elaborate on that definition to allow it.
Okay, so at this point we make a note of it that we have to come back to it. We have to have to define it, and we can go to the second section, which is the procedures for the election of ALEC chair and other officers. Ordinary elections. Now, what we did in the old rules, the procedures of ordinary elections and extraordinary elections were sort of mixed up, and we thought that it might be more clear to break this up and take first ordinary elections and then extraordinary elections. And so ordinary elections of the ALEC officers, and here's a note that number of the officers and titles to be defined, shall be held in connection with the annual general meeting, or, if decided by the ALEC, at another ALEC meeting in connection with an ICANN public meeting. And there was a in Alan's remarks or comments, you said that the chair should preferably be selected before the AGM, and perhaps Alan, yes, please.
Yeah, a couple of things on these points. Yes, when we were discussing role responsibilities and prerequisites and things like that, the topic of when does the selection or election for the chair get done came up a number of times, going all the way back to the Prague meeting and in several of our teleconferences. And there seemed to be a strong feeling that because there could potentially be a very large turnover in the ALEC from meeting to meeting, as many as 8 of the 15 people could change at once, although typically it's not that many, that the chair should be selected by the old ALEC, the people who are most knowledgeable about, you know, the issues that are relevant. And there was also a feeling that it made sense to select the chair prior to the AGM to allow overlap if there was a change. That's sort of similar to what the board does, that incoming board members sit in on all board activities, even though they're not technically on the board, but they get exposed to it, and that allows for a better transition process. So it was felt by the duties group that did make sense for the chair. For the officers, the original feeling was they should be nominated to the extent there are nominations ahead of time and chosen perhaps by the new, if there's contention, if there is more than one person named for a position, they should be changed, chosen at the end of the AGM, either in a specially convened meeting on the Thursday, Friday, or perhaps electronically soon afterwards. Tijani has recently suggested that maybe the whole process be done by the old ALEC, and the duties team needs to revisit that because we haven't discussed his comment. There is some merit in it. In any case, I think we want to make sure that the rules here are flexible enough that it doesn't have to be done at a formal meeting.
Yeah.
As you've already said, it could maybe be done electronically or some other means.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the substance of what I was trying to convey in my
okay.
in my comments.
Thank you. Tijani is asking for the floor. Tijani, please.
Yes, thank you. I do think that we don't have to make the selection of the of the official compulsory at the AGM or after the AGM, because this will pose a problem that the chair is selected by the old ALAC and the officials will be selected by the new ALAC. I don't have any problem to make the new ALAC select the officials, but they have to select all the officials in this case. I don't have any problem to make all the old and the new ALAC select the officials. It is only a matter of definition. I would like it to be well defined from the beginning that this ALAC or this member will elect. This is the electorate. We don't have to change the electorate because there is a convention or there is more than one candidate for one position. The electorate have to be the same in any case. If we have a rationale to say it must be the new, I don't have any problem. If we have the rationale to say it must be the old, it's the same. But we have to find it. We don't have, if there is a problem or if there is contention, the new ALAC will elect it. It is not, in my opinion, it is not fair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Alan, is that your hand is up?
Yes, it is. Just to respond. Knowing how the recommendation that was made at this point came about, that is, the chair should be selected by the old ALAC, the other officers be nominated by the old ALAC but selected by the new, knowing how that came about, I suspect there will not be any real dispute with the changing that to the old ALAC does all of the process. It came up sort of informally in Prague, and we've let it stand without really discussing it a lot. So I suspect Tijani's suggestion of doing it all by the old ALAC to go along with the chair being named by the old ALAC, which was felt to be important. I don't think there's going to be any dispute. I can't speak on behalf of the DMDT, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of discussion over it. I think people will be flexible with that.
Thank you. How are the other members of this drafting team feel about it? Anybody wants to have the floor?
Yeah, Cheryl here.
Cheryl, please.
And I was about to write, and then you asked, so I'm jumping. I personally don't have a problem with the splitting. I absolutely believe that the old ALAC needs to appoint the chair. And I don't have an issue with the splitting, remembering particularly because it's a if a ballot is required rule, which I also wholeheartedly agree to. The rationale for Tijani's one way or the other, I guess, makes it neater. But I think the argument for a new ALAC when a up to 50% turnover could have happened, simply being courted, misled, baffled and bullshitted into appointing people who in fact do not have the skill sets and experience that are required to be part of the leadership team or to be the best for the leadership team is a greater concern than them not being able to do it. So I guess if it has to be one way or the other, I would have to go with the old, doing it all, as Alan has just suggested. That said, it is most unusual for a new board of directors, and this is my my mirroring in my mind here, a new board of directors almost always decides on their leadership team. And so we're almost doing the opposite by putting them all in the old ALAC camp to what many conventions might be seen as reasonable. So if I have to go one way, I'll go with the old. I would see no downside in it actually being split the way it is proposed. But I do think we might have to argue very strongly to justify not being the new. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that, that this was a good point. Tijani, please.
Yes, Shirin, what about both elect the officials?
I'm sorry? Did you say
what about the old and, what about the old and the new two ALAC together to select
the problem there, Tijani, would be the definition of what the ALAC is. I think the argument that the ALAC has to, the ALAC at whatever given point in time, has to elect from itself, its own leadership, is an important one. But it is a possibility that you would have an electorate of between 15 and 22 if you had a 50% turnover, which you theoretically could do. And there's not 22 or 24 people on the ALAC, there is only 15. So you'd have to do it, you know, on the stroke of midnight on the whatever day it was decided that the ALAC switched. I'm just not sure about the practicalities of that. If you start giving extremely important ALAC appointments to beyond currently serving ALAC, then you open up for all sorts of other things to be micro-manipulated from outside of the people who hold the responsibility.
Okay, thank you. We have, couple, I think that Alan was the first to raise his hand.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Heidi. Just, we have a comment from Dave as well in the chat.
Okay. Thank you, Yuria. I guess I cannot live with the suggestion that both ALACs do it. For if nothing else, if we're talking about the, you know, the 18 or 19 or 22 people that Cheryl mentioned, that would give significantly different weight to the different regions, because a region that's turning over a lot of people would have more weight than one that isn't, and I think that is just so counter to how the concepts of how the ALAC is set up that I don't think that makes a lot of sense. Alternately, it would give two votes to the people who were still there, and I think that goes against what we're trying to do of make these things simple and understandable. So I would really not like to see that. One of the reasons that we did have the new ALAC making the decision, if there was a decision to make, because if there were only one nominee for each position, there is no decision. But if there's a decision to make, the rationale for the new ALAC was related to what Cheryl said. The ICANN week is an opportunity for people to discuss who is better at it. It's also an opportunity for coercion and bribery and whatever. It's one of the things. As I said, I can certainly live with Tijani's suggestion of everything being done before. Everything being done after, I think, it has a problem, although I understand it's conventional. It really is a problem in based on what we know of the chair position as it is right now.
Yeah.
So I can live with the split that we currently have, in the draft notes of the DMDP, I can live with everything being done prior to the AGM, or at least by the old ALAC, if not prior to the AGM. But
okay.
The other options I don't think are something that I'd like to see. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Alan. Eduardo, and then I would like to close the discussion of this item. We are not going to decide anything during this call, but I think that this discussion has been very good, you know, putting light on these alternatives, and I think that the alternatives are now crystallizing. Eduardo, please.
Just an idea of what about if we say that the nominations for the officers are done by the old ALAC, and the new ALAC votes for, you know, whoever is nominated.
Alan, that is what the current draft says.
Oh, okay, so I'm being consistent then.
Yeah, I think you're the one who came up with the idea.
Okay. Thank you very much. I suggest now that we move on, and that we leave this point. But as I said, I mean, I have a fairly clear idea of what the options are, alternatives are, and I'm also happy that there seems to be flexibility in this group to have everybody elected by the new ALAC, or to have the chair selected before the AGM and then the officers by the new ALAC. On this count, of course, Cheryl made in my view, a valid point. But I'd like to go forward now and the next step, then we go to this procedural rules, 213, which is pretty much what it used to be in the old rules. You see that there's a chair / ALAC. This was Jaovi actually who said that it might be better that not the chair or not the chair alone is responsible for this, because he or she may also be involved in these elections. Jaovi, you want to say something about this?
I think I joined a bit late. Are we speaking, please? Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I can, if I can, the portion of the party is talking about is the call for election. So I say that because the current chair is calling for a position where Mehdi himself will be a candidate for this position, he may not be very comfortable to send the call out, or people may not find it very very good for him to call for an election where he's a candidate. So this is what we discussed in the pen holder. We say that the ALAC chair with the staff. So maybe the ALAC chair will ask the staff to send a call out, or we find another way. So, but the main point is that the chair might be in a situation where he might not be very comfortable. To make people comfortable, so it is preferable for him to work with the staff to send the call out. So that was the idea behind it, not having the chair send the call out. I don't know if it is clear.
Thank you, Jaovi. Now I have seen I've seen a couple of hands up. I think that Alan was the first.
Thank you. There's a lot of places in the rules where it says the chair or delegate or things like that, because there are many, many reasons why the chair may not may be in a conflict position or may not be available to do something. Accordingly, the MADT in its draft rules, I think it's the MADT, it may be the duties one, I'm not sure. But in any case, there is definitely a statement saying anywhere it says the chair may, due to conflict or other unavailability, may delegate. So in your section, you can safely say the chair, understanding it might be someone else who's already covered. The chair always has the right to delegate in that kind of situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That I think that clears the matter pretty well. Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl, for the transcript record. I'm just going to draw on, and I agree with what Alan has said. I think we're okay because of the way things are defined elsewhere in the document. But the other thing is your concern about apparent compromise or discomfort. Convention in other ways, again, I draw back on board governance normally, where there is often a secretary of a board or governance committee whose legal requirement it is to call on things like elections and annual general meetings, has very particular responsibilities under various jurisdictional laws, have to happen at certain times in certain ways. And I think this business of the chair having to do it in our original rules is a parallel to that. But the way to get around that, even if the chair does not choose to delegate on this role, but is in fact seen to be or is actually concerned, what a secretary who is also a serving member of a governance group, for example, will often do, and it's in fact could be convention to do it, is make such a call by order of, and in this case it would be by order of the ALAC. So there's always a way of getting away from what you've identified. That said, that's a sort of savvy and experienced way of handling it. The fact that, as Alan pointed out, you've got the option to have delegation is also built into the system. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think that, thank you very much, both Cheryl and Alan. I think that this pretty much clears this issue. I see in the chat, Heidi asks whether this text of 213 could be expanded to cover the next steps, which is acceptance of the nomination and so on and so forth. There are sort of new subsections on this, but of course we could discuss putting them all together if necessary. Now, 2.1.4, this is of course for this situation, well actually we have the two possibilities here. If the election happens at the AGM, or actually right after the AGM, then anybody who has a chance of becoming an ALAC member can be nominated, but will be disqualified if he or she fails to become a member. And then when we have elections at other ALAC meetings, of course only current ALAC members can be nominated. Is this anybody has anything? Yes, Alan, please.
As I mentioned in my comment, the situation is a bit complex because we've been essentially told by the review, ALAC review, that the chair term should be 2 years. So there's a question of what about people who are not 100% going to be here for 2 years. And under the under duties and prerequisites, the duties group talked a lot about this, and I think we've come up with words that we feel very comfortable. I put them in the chat, in the comment that I put, But in fact, I'm not sure they need to be in the election process because they will be one of the prerequisites of, for being a chair. They can go in either. I don't really care where they go. But we've come up with words which essentially say, yes, there should normally be the chance that you will serve a second term, but it, but we do not want to limit our choice to someone who may be a very bad chair because they're the only person around who has says they have the time and will guarantee to be on for 2 years.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But, I mean, this... this will be taken care of in the other section of the rules. Is that what?
It could go either, but it does fit in the list of prerequisites. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. But this, I mean, whatever happens, I mean, in a sense, 2.1.4 still stands, right? I mean, it's not sort of contradicted by.
No, it is valid, but there are some other conditions on top of that. But yes, at this point, I would say leave it be, and when we put all the four sections together,
okay,
there
will right.
be some editing to be done, and this may well be one of them. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, and Tijani, please.
Yes, thank you. I think I am commenting on what Alan said, and I think he's right. It must be detailed here too, because it's part of the election selection and appointment procedure. We have to say if we stick to the 2 years in the rule of procedure for the chair, we have to explain and to address any situation, because there is a lot of situations. There is people who have only 1 year left in ALAC, and he is of very great value that we want to use him during this year as a chair. This situation has to be treated in the rule of procedure. There is also the case of if we choose someone for 2 years and we notice midway that we had done a very big mistake. How do? Shall we keep him for 2 years? So, a lot of things to be addressed in the rules of procedure in the election and appointment section regarding the election of the chair, if we want it to be absolutely 2 years in the rule of procedure. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, yes, Jaube, please.
Thank you very much. I was not able to hear very well what Jenny said. I want to be sure that I understand. Is it that he said we have to consider the case of that is still good, we want to use him, but he has only 1 year left as an ALAC member. So as you are suggesting to give 2 years to the chair, we should also consider this aspect. Is it the point he raised? Because I didn't hear very well. Thank you.
Yes, the journey, you want to answer?
Yes, Yaobi, it was an example. I said that we have to address all the cases, because if you want it to be 2 years term for the chair, you have to address any case that will be the consequence of this decision. And there is a lot of cases. There is the case that you mentioned. There is also the case that we elect or we select a chair, and we notice that we made a big mistake. Shall we keep him for 2 years? What is the procedure to address this situation? For example, there is a lot of other situations. So I said that if we want it to be absolutely 2 years for the as a term for the chair, we need to address any case that can happen. Thank you.
Okay. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. The case of picking a bad chair, I presume, will be handled by the recall rules, which I think is within this drafting team but not yet drafted. If not, someone needs to be assigned them, but I think it's within this group. In terms of the many options, I believe the words that we drafted and the ones I inserted in the in my comment cover all of the cases. There are very, very few times when someone does not have the possibility of serving 2 years. Some RALOs do not have term limits, so that's not an issue for them. The NOMCOM has no term limits, so that's not an issue. If you are at your term limit with only 1 year left from a RALO, there is the possibility you could run through the NOMCOM and be appointed. The only time that you do not have a possibility of serving a second year is if you're at the end of a term-limited RALO appointment and it is an off year for your region for the NOMCOM, because all the regions alternate. So that's the only possibility, the only time, and it's a rare case, and we've covered that one by using the term normally. So I believe the current words, I mean, they may need, as Jani suggests, they may need to be fleshed out and explained in detail, but I believe they're all covered by the text that you've seen. Thank you.
Okay. And there's Yaobi, please.
Sorry to take, to talk again. I just want to ask, Alan, are you saying, please, that if someone has only 1 year left from his RALO, this person can be re-elected through NOMCOM? Do we have a way to influence the decision on NOMCOM? Because I think that can be done, but we are not sure that NOMCOM can re-elect this person because he needs another year to complete the 2 years. So yeah. It's just a question about this aspect. Thank you.
We have the ability to influence the NOMCOM by talking to people, which does not give us any control whatsoever. But the current rules in today's rules of procedure say you must have the possibility of being an ALAC member in the next term. That possibility is still there. Mm-hmm. If you start limiting it to people who only have exactly 2 years left, because that's the length of all terms, you have no control. RALO will reappoint you even if there is no term limit. So that would limit us to a very small selection of people, because at any given time, there's only about half the ALAC is at the beginning of a term, and to limit that your selection to that, given the huge amount of the time commitment that a chair is currently expected to make, and the skills necessary, would be a very bad thing for the ALAC, I think.
Okay. Perhaps, I don't know, can I ask you, Alan, to think whether eventually something needs to be said about this problem in our piece of the rules, and if not, then we just, we assume that this is taken care elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm certainly against repeating the same words in two different rules.
Yes.
It makes it just horrible when you make a change.
Yeah.
And it fits very well in the list of prerequisites for a chair. So I'm happy to not have it in this section at all and keep it in the duties section.
Okay.
As I said, it could move here if people feel strongly that it should, and that could be done at the final edit. But at this point, it is being considered and has been considered by the duties group, and we've come up with words that virtually everyone on several calls in a row has felt comfortable with. So I'll leave it at that. After that, if Cheryl's the boss of this whole thing, she can make a ruling, but I'm comfortable leaving it there at the moment.
Okay, I see a check mark.
I think
Cheryl, please.
I was going to say, Cheryl's got a great big green tick up next to what Alan was saying, so mm-hmm. I think that says it all.
Okay. All right, so we're happy with what we have now, and we can move further. 2.1.5, just they like it used to be in the old rules, a nominee has to be sent a message of acceptance within 7 days. 2.1.6, what happens after the nomination acceptance deadline has passed, and that's also pretty much like it used to be in the old rules. 2.
Sorry. Sure, I'm having connectivity problems, and I actually had to reconnect before I could get my hand up. I apologize.
Okay.
Can I just take you back to 2.1.5, please? I know it's...
Yes, please, sir. Go ahead.
In 2.1.5, in the first sentence, we talk on the public list, public ALAC list. Can I encourage you to say an identified or just a public list? And I'll let you know why. You don't want to get into discussions of what the definition of a public ALAC list is. I think the ALAC should have the right at any time to say what list it will be publishing its things to, and it needs to be said and clear. But I'd hate to see it as we had once before, where we ended up having to publish on several lists because no one was going to relinquish which one they thought was the most important or the actual one that was referred to in the rules. So just as you're drafting that, just be careful that the doesn't impart a specific list
okay.
by some sort of naming here. And the other thing was with your acceptance in 7 days, as I've said before, I think we need to be... there is an opportunity now to see whether or not self-nominations are deemed to be acceptances at the same time. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan, please.
Yeah, I agree that we should be loose in terms with respect to mailing lists. A decision was made in the MADT that there will be an adjunct document, that is something that can be changed with a little bit more flexibility than the rules of procedure, which will identify what lists the ALAC has, who is members of them, and to the extent it is appropriate, what they should be used for. And I think that will be a fine place for your various calls and acceptances and stuff to be identified in that list. It doesn't have a name right now, but you know, if you call it the as identified in the adjunct mailing list or something, we can clean that up in the final edit. So there will be a list of mailing lists, and that goes along with another comment I made, where when you're calling for nominations for appointees, you know, we want to make sure to announce them in places where people can read.
Yeah.
And we don't only want to announce them in private places that people can't see. Thank you.
Okay, I think that that's to have an annex or whatever you call it for this detailed stuff is a great idea, and this is something that I have been thinking of also for our part for you know, concerning election mm-hmm. mechanics and so on and so forth. So we could pass this one and 2.1.6 again. Public ALAC list here should be read, you know, in a more generic way, and then the definition will be found in that annex Alan was talking about. The same goes for 2.1.7. That is to say, nominations shall then be discussed on the public ALEC list, a mailing list for whatever it will be, and also of course, mentioned the other possibilities, instant messaging services, telephone, and whatever you have, face-to-face meetings. But then we have something which says, with the aim, among others, of ensuring the representation of all five ICANN readers among the officers. Is this the place to put this requirement? Yes, please, Alan.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I believe, I'm participating in so many of the groups that I get a little bit fuzzy. But I think in the one on duties and prerequisites, when we talk about the officers, which, by the way, the name has been changed, but let's call them officers for the moment. When we talk about the officers, I think we do address the need for an officer from each region. Other than the chair. So I think I don't think we need to mention it here, because I think it is being specified in the definition of the XCOM and of the officers.
Okay.
And we need to make sure it is, but that's surely where that I believe is where it belongs. I have no problem here mentioning that, but I don't think we need to focus on it.
Okay, thank you. Cherry, please.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the record. I put my hand up just before Alan said his last sentence. I certainly see no harm in the way this is loosely written staying here, because I can, now I've read this thing, this section, sorry, it's too early for me to be polite, this particular sentence, I can see a benefit for future-proofing. If there was, for example, a situation where for whatever reason we were unable to have all four other regions, or seven or however many regions there might be in the future, catered for, I'd hate to see the selection process held up because not all slots were being filled when we could make an appointment in a different way. And so having that sentence here, actually, I think is an assistive. So if Alan can live with leaving it there but not expanding on it, I think it could be very handy if I was, you know, trying to future-proof it at some point. Thanks.
But, Chair, should we actually, you said that the number of regions may change, so should we actually just say of all ICANN regions and not specifying the number?
Yeah, I would. I certainly would be saying ICANN geographic regions or ICANN regions.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Okay, fine. Then 2.1.8. Alan, sorry. Yes.
Cheryl asked me if I can live with it. First of all, I support not having the number. However, I'll point out our whole concept of regional representation falls apart if ICANN ends up with 22 regions.
But
on the other hand, our travel budget would go through. On the other hand, our travel budget would go through the roof. But in any case, I support taking the number out. However, Cheryl mentioned something we've never discussed before: of what happens if we can't find a candidate, or as we know them, a sucker from a specific region to take on the role. And that is something we need to mention. So, Cheryl, I don't think we've ever discussed it, but we do need to make sure that we don't stop the whole process because we cannot find a candidate. So that's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, leaving those words in gives us wriggle room, and I'm all for wriggle room. Yeah.
Yeah, but we need to cover it in the other section also.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. 2.1.8. And this is, of course, elections in connection with the AGM, and is pretty much a rewrite of the old rules, making clear that that the electorate will include those members whose term starts at that AGM and will not include the former ALEC members whose term ends at that AGM. And then if elections are held at other meetings, the vote will be during the meeting and the electorate will consist of current ALEC members only. Alan, please.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, I think we need to take out the 48 hours after a meeting. Depending on where that meeting is held, there's almost always some people who are traveling for 48 hours. So I think we need to be a little bit more flexible.
Okay.
That being said, I think we've already pretty well locked in on the fact that the only election that we have that is necessary is the chair, and we're going to do that before the AGM. So I think this statement needs to be a little bit more flexible. That is, for elections that are done by the new ALEC, or that are carried out by the new ALEC, it should be done as soon as possible, but no later than, a week after the meeting or something like that. There is a possibility that one could convene the new ALEC physically at the AGM at the Friday, just like the board used to do. And have the meeting there. So I think it needs to refer to only the elections that are going to be carried out by the new ALEC, and then be a little bit more lenient than 48 hours because we never meet that deadline.
Okay. All right. Tijani's put a green check mark here. You want to say something? No. Okay. Okay.
And probably too much.
Then 2.1.9. The ALEC can designate an independent third party to conduct the mechanics of the vote. This comes from the old rules. And so does the 2.1.10, which is about the voting mechanism. And here, of course, the word confidential appears again. Tijani, please.
Yes, right now we are laying on the big pumps techniques, but in fact it is a good thing to mention that we can make use of someone that we decided is we can delegate to him this mechanic. The confidentiality for any vote on persons is something that is very important because it avoids a lot of conflicts between persons, between people. So I do think that the confidentiality for the vote on people, on election, is very important. When we vote on text, on a motion, it's not a problem. So we don't need confidentiality. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. The line, at least up here to Finland, was rather weak. So I don't know if I understood everything. But meanwhile, I give the floor to Alan, and then we come back to Tijani.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to do something uncharacteristic to me. I'm going to give you a specific suggestion for drafting. I would suggest you invert 2.1.9 and 2.1.10. That is, put 10 first.
Okay.
And then in 9, you add in a sentence which covers the very first point I made a long time ago. It will then say, ALEC can designate an independent third party to conduct the mechanics of the vote. The use of such a third party shall not
or shall be deemed to not violate the confidentiality of the vote.
The use of a third party will not...
Such a third party shall be deemed to not violate the confidentiality.
Okay.
So that essentially says we can pick someone we trust, and I presume that that could include a staff member without having to say it explicitly, and that person knowing how people voted does not violate the confidentiality. So it addresses a whole bunch of the problems that I raised earlier, including phone votes and things like that, and fits very nicely with what you have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps, could I ask Tijani to, if you could just put a few lines in the chat of your suggestion, because as I said, the line was so weak that I'm not sure that I got your suggestion. Yes.
It's Alan. I think I heard Tijani. He was reinforcing the need for confidentiality, but by whatever method needed, including a third party. But he then added that we're talking only about elections, that non-personnel votes are not confidential.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Tijani, did that capture what you were saying?
Exactly, Alan.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We have also in the chat, Dev asks with a shrug, what is the need for 2.1.9?
I can answer that, Cheryl, for the transcript record. Believe it or not, Dev, there are people who will argue without that clause being in that should a ballot be required, a ballot would have to be done by little squares of paper handed to anonymous little squares of paper handed to somebody and counted up in public. It's scary, but we actually had an argument once in the dim, dark and distant days, thank heavens, which went along the lines of could we even use online voting mechanisms? Would they be valid? Because technically that was outside the control of ICANN and indeed ALAC, and indeed, you know, would such a use of a third party violate and, oh, trust me, it's a handy little clause.
Okay,
yeah.
Alan, please.
Yeah, and the other side of what Cheryl just said is a little bit after those dim dark days, there are other more recent dim dark days where people insisted that the only way we could possibly conduct a ballot is online using Big Pulse, and any other technology
yeah.
would not be suffice. And we have written the term Big Pulse into rules. So.
Which is silly.
We've gone from one side to the other.
Yeah. All right. Now we're now reached the top of the hour. Can I ask the staff? Is this 1 hour call or 1.5 hour call?
Hi, Yuri. This is Heidi. It's a 90-minute call.
90 minutes. Okay, so we can go on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I have noted Alan's suggestion. Thank you very much. I like very much concrete suggestions to reverse the order, and to add what you suggested to the point about the independent third party. There's one more sub-point here, or subsection, whatever. 2.1.11, there shall be a quorum for the election to be valid. And there's a note that, of course, what is a quorum should be defined by the DSTD. We can go...
MATD, I think, but we are defining
MATD, okay. All right. MATD.
We'll just leave it to be defined.
Yeah, yes. Extraordinary elections, 2.2. And here's an explanation. First, what they are, extraordinary elections are held if for any reason a vacancy arises outside the normal election cycle and an officer position becomes vacant before the end of the term. And then further, when such vacancy occurs, the chair will immediately send to a public ELAC list again, I mean this mailing list, which will be defined, an election call for filling the open position for the remainder of the ordinary term, and asking for nominations by a 14-day deadline or sooner if warranted by special circumstances. I see nobody protesting, so I can read on. Eduardo, please.
See, this is Eduardo Diaz for the record. It's just a question. Are we in? I don't know if this team or another team, but what happened is the like it happens. I think last year that somebody resigned and the officer was elected by the non-com. It doesn't have to do anything with that, right?
Could you repeat? I'm not sure whether I. Yes.
Yes. This doesn't have to do anything with if one of the officers doesn't end the term, and that officer was appointed by the non-com.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to do anything with that, right?
That's a good question. Well, I see Olivier. Okay, lots of hands. First, Olivier, please.
Thank you, Yuro. It's Olivier for the transcript. Just answering Rosal's question, it's interesting because, of course, we're dealing here with officers. We're not dealing with ALAC. So we know that as far as the ALAC is concerned, then, of course, that person selected by the NOMCOM will be replaced by someone else. Whom the NOMCOM will have to select, and it has happened, and the way that it happened was the NOMCOM to reconvene and have its own process for selecting someone and sending it to us. But that actually takes time. So the question then comes as to whether we want the whole of ALAC to be full again and before selecting someone, because it is the ALAC that will select somebody, or whether this the process restarts right away. I would think that just having the process start right away and not waiting for the officer for the NOMCOM to select someone else is probably the way to go, because the NOMCOM, as I said, might take a month to select someone. Thank you.
Yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense. Next is Yalvi.
Yeah, thank you. It is a good point raised by Eduardo. But as he said, this member was selected by by NOMCOM. I think that the replacement has to come also from the NOMCOM, because this person generally doesn't belong to ERALO.
You have 1 minute remaining.
We are having some reform in NOMCOM. We just checked. If something cannot be done also so that we don't delay too much this election, that is my concern, because this person that we are going to replace is not necessary from ERALO. It is from the ACLAD in general. So this is my point of view.
I totally disagree with Yavi's point.
Jerry, you want...
I just have to jump in there. I'm sorry, Cheryl, for the record. I totally and absolutely disagree with your point, Yavi, and let me tell you why. Once you are appointed to the ALAC, you are ALAC. We don't care if the Calafumpians send you. You are one of the 15-person ALAC. From whence you came no longer matters. We appoint to the leadership team which are a set of roles, the best people for the job. It's not linked to whether they've come from regional appointment or NOMCOM appointment. So there is no harm in replacing a casual vacancy from the puddle of known entities left in the ALAC. The likelihood, there is no guarantee of you knowing a new appointee sent to you to replace a NOMCOM person who's disappeared. If you do, then it might work out. If you don't and you hold up the process, you could be 2 or 3 months, more than just 1 month, without a person, not just giving regional representation to the ALAC, and that is bad enough, but one short in a balanced regional leadership role, and that is scary. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. Alan, please.
Thank you. A number of points. First of all, in replacing a NOMCOM person, it may or may not happen quickly. Any given NOMCOM could say, we're not going to reconvene. We'll wait for the next NOMCOM a year from now, or up to a year from now, to make a decision. So there is no guarantee that a NOMCOM will do anything if a NOMCOM person resigns, you know, other than presumably at the next cycle, they will likely reappoint someone. I'm not even sure they're required to do that. So that's number one. Number two, this whole section is called extraordinary elections. Yet we're talking about officers. Shouldn't we only be talking about the chair? Maybe I'm missing something. In the original section, we're saying appointments are done far more flexibly than the election of the chair. So I think we need to separate the process. The current 2.2.3 you have, saying only elect members from the same region can fill the vacancy, I would hate to say that if Olivier decides tomorrow he's going to Tahiti and he's not going to be chair anymore, that our only choices are the members from Europe. They may be excellent, but in any given year, they may not have the time, they may not have the desire to be chair. And I think if the chair resigns, we go back to square one, and we find the best chair that we can. And that may mean some juggling of the rest of the XCOM and the other rest of the officers, so be it. We cannot afford to take the only default chair we have, you know, even if that person doesn't have the interest or, you know, for that matter, doesn't have the time. So let's be careful what we write here. We may get what we ask for, and we may not like it. Thank you.
Okay, I see green tick marks, Cheryl, Dev, Eduardo, and Olivier. I understand you are saying yes to what Alan just said, and not to the wording we see on the ad. Tijani, please.
Thank you, Alan, for what you said. Because I had exactly the same feeling, and I think that we have to split two things. When we speak about the chair, it's one thing. Everything shall be done from the beginning, I think. But if we are speaking about the other officials, I don't see any relationship with the NOMCOM. There is no problem. It is, we are talking about the officials of ALAC. We are not talking about the ALAC members. And anyone who was appointed by NOMCOM and who was elected or selected for the XCOM, for example, can be replaced by someone who is not a NOMCOM appointee. There is no problem. There is no problem at all. So the very important thing is to separate the chair from the others. And the second point, no relationship between this point and the NOMCOM. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl, please.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the record. Because Tijani and Alan are agreeing with each other so much, I think I should jump in and disagree with the point Alan made. which is what I'm about to do. And that is actually a joke for the transcript record. Not the fact that I'm disagreeing, but that I feel that's the reason why I need to do so. I would actually suggest, Alan, that this is not limited. The extraordinary elections is not simply limited to an appointment of the chair in the matter of a casual vacancy. I would prefer to change it from extraordinary elections to extraordinary elections, selections and appointments, or selections, appointments and elections, whichever order you want them in. And I always like to have elections last. And the reason for that is that I really do think that whilst we've got that sentence in there earlier on that gives us the wriggle room aiming for regional balance where possible, that the way this is written, if it's applied to all of the leadership, anything that is an appointment, and there are leadership teams, there are liaisons, there are a number of things that this could actually apply to. The first time round, they may end up being consensus agreed to, but in the matter of a casual vacancy, they may in fact end up being hotly contested, and you may have to have a ballot for any of them. So I'd prefer to have them applicable to all appointments which need to be made as a result of casual vacancy, that we take care of the matter of the utopian and preferred regional balance in the leadership team at the time if that is an issue, but I certainly agree with the removal of the if you come from the Pacific Islands, you have to be replaced by someone from the Pacific Islands. I'm dead against that. You absolutely, and particularly as Alan said, in the matter of the very more demanding roles, need to be the best person for the job. And that's another reason why I'd like it appointed applicable blanket-wise to all casual vacancies for representational roles. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I see that there is a great agreement both in the chat and also the check mark. What I take home from this discussion is that we delete this requirement in 2.2.3. About, you know, coming from the region where the vacancy occurred, and we changed the title of this subsection to cover elections, selections, and appointments. The next is 2.2.4, within 7 days of nominations deadline, the chair will publish an election summary of all valid nominations, announcing the date, time, and modalities of the election, and specifying the term of the appointment. This is what I took from the comments from Alan. Alan, please.
Thank you. First, I just want to tell Cheryl, I was commenting on the title as it stands. If you change the title, I'm agreeing with you. So your disagreement with me doesn't count. Okay, within 7 days of the Cheryl. I believe, although I'm not sure whose jurisdiction terms is under, the DSDT, Cheryl, I think. Not DSDT, the DMDT group, originally had made a decision that the ALAC would determine whether the replacement term is to the end of the previous person's term or another term or whatever. At the last meeting, for whatever reasons, everybody changed their mind and said it should just be for the replacement of the existing person to the end of their term. So I think you can be definitive about that.
Okay.
Unless everyone changes their mind again, in which case we'll tell you.
Yeah.
I do think, Cheryl, here, that to the end of the original term for a casual vacancy, is again something that you'll find precedent and understood in a lot of other areas. And there is the scenario of people serving extraordinarily longer than they could possibly serve officially if you don't control that. But you need to be really, really clear on this, and I do think rather than the specifying the term of the appointment, it should be in the rule 2.2.4 until to the term of the original appointment is reached. Because if, for example, you've got a chair that was appointed for 2 years and 3 months before or 6 months before the end of their term, for whatever reason, leg fell off, whatever, their ears fell off probably, they have to relinquish their appointment, then whoever is appointed to fill that casual vacancy should only fill it for 3 or 6 months.
Okay. I think we can now go to the special provisions, 2.3, and 2.3.1. I make a promise here that the election system is described in the annex, which is to be written or whatever, and I hope that you know. I don't know who writes it, but if it's the Yaovi and me, I hope that we get lots of help. And then 2.3.2, if two or more candidates receive the same highest number of preferences, a runoff election is to be conducted. And then next point is again the posting the election summary. Listing only these two candidates, and runoff election will be on its way, and then we go even more hypothetical cases 2.3.4. If in case no candidate is elected for any other reason, lack of valid nominations, lack of valid preferences, a new election call will be posted. I don't know if we need to go to all these details, or if we have an annex, we might be able to put some of these details in that.
Yep.
2.3.5, incumbent officers shall continue to serve.
Area?
Yes, Alan, please.
Yeah, in 2.3.4 captures something which we don't have anywhere else and may well want to preserve in the rules, and that is somebody, and this says the officers, and I'm not 100% sure that's correct, but it almost doesn't matter, that it says we have the ability to make an emergency appointment so a role is filled. Specifically in the case of a chair, not having a chair, if the current chair, forgive me, Olivier, dies, or for some reason chooses, you know, to stop running, to not be available as of 3 minutes from now, having a temporary person serve is a very useful thing to do. So we may well want to preserve something like that there. I think we don't have a rule like that now, and I think it's a good rule. And I'm not sure it matters a lot who does the selection, since it's for a very short period of time.
Okay. Thank you. So we keep it, and we just look at the text, try to make it more elegant. Cherry, please.
Thank you. I must draw, Cheryl, for the record, I must draw attention to the transcript of the chat right now. Olivier talked to the selection of his demise, really quite impressive. However, on a less humorous and I'm afraid deadly serious situation, and I do mean deadly serious, under normal circumstances the role of the vice chairs, etc., fit in on something like the hypothetical of the chair dropping off his mortal coil as sad as it may be, Olivier, if and when you were to have your heart attack in the middle of chairing the meeting, you ought to have at least two other vice chairs who can step in. The situation, and I hate to say it, but it can actually occur, and not actually hypothetically, is when the whole leadership team has, for whatever reason, become in a situation where they no longer can perform their roles. So you can use your own imaginations there. The bus containing them on the tour has rolled down the crevice and none are to be found, living or dead, or they've all just stomped out because they're having a hissy fit. It doesn't matter which extreme. But yes, you definitely need to have the ability to make an emergency and temporary appointment, and I think that's a great catch. I think that's a hugely positive thing to have. That's one of the things I wouldn't have in the annex, and I definitely would enshrine in the rule. Thanks.
Okay, all right. Tijani, please.
Yes, thank you. I think that the vice chair, as we are defining him, is there to replace the chair in case of any vacancy. So I think also that we need to say in your extraordinary election that in case of the if the term of the official is the Romanian term is less than exile, we will not run an election. We will leave with. And it is the same with the chair also, because the vice chair will become chair for the few months or the few weeks that are remaining for the next AGM. Thank you.
Thank you. Alan, please.
Yeah, just to comment on what Cheryl said, you'll be happy to know about 12 or 15 minutes ago, I wrote on my little to-do list the word chair succession list. That is, we need to specify in the case of unavailability, that is, the chair cannot delegate someone because the chair is not able to do that, what the succession list is. So it will be covered somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. But that will not be in this election part.
No.
Okay.
No,
good.
But you may, when we draft it, you may want to make reference to it after you see it.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. Tijani? Your hand is up. Is that...
I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Yahweh, please. Yahweh, are you connected? Or maybe on mute?
Yahweh, our second to unmute.
Yahweh, you have a floor. Well, maybe he can't hear me or can't speak, so we come back to him if he can get the... But I think the succession list, of course, is something that is absolutely needed. 2.3.5, that's the incumbent officers. I think we covered that already. And 3 is procedure for other appointments. And that's all other appointments, specifically including liaisons, which will be made by ELAC. Any comments on this one? Here we basically assume that these appointments can be made by consensus, but if consensus is not reached, or this is requested by any ALAC member, the chair will start a formal election procedure. Cherry, please.
Yeah, I'm Cheryl for the record, and no guess that I'm going to say I like this approach. I like this approach. What I would do, though, now we've read through the earlier parts in the 2.3s, I would have an additional piece in the threes to say if and when a casual vacancy occurs, see above. That's all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. 3.2, ALAC representatives to the nominating committee will be proposed by RALOS based on their internal selection processes. There's been some, we discussed among the pen holders whether we could somehow reinforce this role of RALOS. But after Alan's comments that that might be difficult, I dropped this sentence, and so it's now based on their internal selection processes. Cheryl, are you're objecting to?
I'm disagreeing with the way it is written, because it could be interpreted that that means that the only proposal for nominating committees from regions would come from RALOS, and that I am dead against. It is one of the most important jobs that the ALAC has, i.e. the 15 people who are the ALAC, to carefully and in great consideration appoint regional NOMCOM representatives, a very valuable resource for the people they should be looking at, are the RALOS, but it is only a resource. If it's written as it could be interpreted here, that there is a determination by the RALOS, we are turning over one of our most important bylaw mandated roles of the ALAC.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this Olivier is agreeing with this one. Cheryl, how would you like to formulate, if we say anything about the ALAC representatives to the nominating committee, how should it be formulated?
To be honest, if I had my druthers, and Olivier will probably do it far more elegantly than me, because he's served on both sides of that sort of equation, I would refer that the ALAC representatives to the nominating committee, and then insert the reference to the bylaw as defined in. So it's clearly in our rules who does it. It is the ALAC, right? It's done by the ALAC. So that's the first rule. We just remind them that under bylaw, ALAC does the selection for the representatives.
Yeah.
And then have a subclause that says, however, as the ALAC seeks to find the best and most trusted people for the role, proposals from the RALOS, based on whatever internal selection process they choose, will be considered. Something along
will be considered. Okay. All right. Thank you. This is noted. Olivier, please.
Thank you, Yuro, it's Olivier, for the transcript, and specifically for the transcript, since this is recorded. Just a quick reason why the ALAC needs to retain this. It was a privilege which was given to the ALAC when the ALAC was actually taken some privileges away. They had several members of the at large, had several people that were directly elected to the board, to the ICANN board. When things were changed around, those were the ALAC was stripped of, or at-large was stripped of any directors, and in replacement, it was afforded the ability to select people for the nominating committee. That's how it was done. And so it is the ALAC that needs to retain this. That's the basis, and that's for the transcript. Thank you.
Okay, so these are the crown jewels of ALAC. Yalvi, please.
Thank you. Yavi speaking. It's for better understanding. I understand that it is a privilege for ALAC to send five people to the nomination committee. Is it correct? Before I continue.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
So, what I want to say is, So what I want to add is that we can also as ALAC have the region propose people to us. No, not us, ALAC. Propose people to ALAC. Then ALAC is free to accept or not. But my point is that what is not good for ALAC is to have the region send a list of people to ALAC from a region. So my point, my preference is that the region send a proposition, one person to ALAC. ALAC is free to accept or to reject, but not send two people to ALAC. Because my point is that we have to be confident on the regions too. Because we send them the criteria, we make good people from the nomination committee. But when they send us a list of people, also that is not good. That is my personal view, that this is a way to reinforce the dialogue. But ALAC is totally free to reject or to accept. Thank you.
Thank you, Yavi. Tijani is next.
Thank you, Yao. I do agree that the ALAC has the liberty to appoint anyone from each region to the NOMCOM. It is the bylaw. But if we follow the bottom-up model of ICANN, and if we follow the method used for the ALS accreditation, I think that ALAC should confirm or reject the proposal from the RALUS. And any rejection should be motivated by a bad performance, a bad profile, a bad profile of the nominee. Not ALAC shouldn't be part of the regional balance or not regional balance, let's say internal conflict of the RALUS. We need only to address the profile of the appointee or of the nominee. So I think that the RALUS should propose names and ALAC should accept them or reject them. And the rejection should be motivated by the bad profile, not by anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. We are pretty much out of time, but we have to close this discussion after this. But now it's Alan, please.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I'm afraid I'm going to break my tradition of agreeing with Tijani and vice versa. First of all, with the ALS, as we accept or the ALEC accepts or rejects the advice, but it is a binary decision. The selection of a person to the NOMCOM is not a binary decision, because if we reject the person proposed by the region, we still have to name someone. So, you know, it's fine to say we can reject it, but the process still needs to be that the ALEC identifies someone who is a citizen of that region to be the NOMCOM appointee. In the past, we have used a variety of different rules and different processes. There are times where we have taken a single suggestion from the RALO and ratified it, when in hindsight, that was the worst thing we could have done, because the person was not a good NOMCOM person, NOMCOM participant. Other times, there have been regions who have said, we are not able to make a selection. Here are two names. ALAC, you pick. So I think whatever rules we write down have to allow for the flexibility of those kinds of things. And I did put in the chat what the bylaws say. It says the selection is made by the ALAC in consultation with the RALO. No more. So I think the largest thing we have to do is set expectations correctly, something we have not done at this point. And clearly in the future we need to. Thank you.
Thank you. Olivier is next, please.
Thank you, Yuro. It's Olivier. For the record, I agree with Alan, and I'm a little concerned of using the word rejecting the advice from the railroads. I think that's just not productive at all. I think that when the ALAC votes for someone else than the person that is recommended by a RALO, it's just that it thinks, or at least a majority of the people on the ALAC believe that someone else is more suitable. But they're not rejecting anyone. It's not a case of rejecting people because they're no good. So I'd be very worried about using that kind of language. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think that this discussion was very good. I mean, it gave sort of food for thought for the pen holders. Okay. Gisela is saying that Tijani dropped, but I think that at this stage we are already 7 minutes over the half an hour, so that I think we have to call it a day or night from my perspective. Thank you very much. This was very productive, very good, and I think that the pen holders have now material on most of these points and sub points to write the next version. So that's basically the action item for the pen holders to produce the next version. For the meeting which we will have in two weeks' time.
It's Alan. I've been very vocal in this meeting, and if there are any sections that you feel I should draft because they were sort of the concept I put forward, and then please feel free, you and Jovi, please feel free to call on me, and I'll do that.
Yes, I was planning to do that.
I volunteered first. So
yes, yeah. Okay, so I'm sending you email pretty
fine.
Soon. Okay, so thank you everybody, and we meet in 2 weeks' time. Thank you.
Great meeting. Thank you.
Guys.
Right. Thank you.
Well done.
Thanks.
Thanks, Yuro. Thanks to Yaobi as well. Thanks for all the.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you, everyone. The meeting audio will now be disconnected. Thank you.